You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Yeah, the topic for this morning is mom guilt. And I guess really the starting place for this is to ask the question, why not dad guilt, right? What's up with this? And the truth is, even though clearly we know that dads struggle with making mistakes in their parenting or failures, and sometimes those kind of rock them, I would argue it doesn't usually get to the core of their identity like it does for women. And I think that it's very different. They've actually done studies, don't ask me how they've done these, where they found that men, dads, are much less likely to compare themselves to other dads. And as I'm going to argue in a minute, I think that's one of the core things that drives this guilt for us women. And so I think that kind of makes it separate too. So I think for a variety of reasons, this is more a mom phenomenon than it is. And I would argue too, this is largely a Western phenomenon. For a variety of reasons, again, we'll go into some of those, but this is something I think that we struggle with here in the West, maybe to the exclusion of a lot of other cultures. Okay, where do we start with this? I think it would be foolish to not talk about mom guilt without kind of starting from this place, which is, if you Google the definition of guilt, right, you find it has more than one definition, no surprise. And one definition is guilt is the fact of having committed a breach of conduct, especially violating law and involving a penalty, right? So all that to say that there is such a thing as feeling bad about something because we've actually done something wrong. I you know, just for shorthand, I think of this as true guilt. And what I'm talking about here is those episodes where we know we've crossed a line, you know? And I hope we can be real with each other this morning and own the fact that we all do this with our kids. We're not happy about it, but we do it. You know, I don't know what comes to your mind, probably something, but I think an obvious one is losing our temper with our kids. You know, I think that for some of us, you know, it could be legit that we legit have been ignoring our kids, maybe just too tied into our phones when we're with them, whatever. It could be that we're overly focused on those negative qualities of our kid to the exclusion of anything good about them, whatever. There are times where we legitimately cross the line. And I think when we're talking about mom guilt, we got to be real about that. And I think the starting point for this is to own it when this takes place. I think minimizing when we mess up, legit mess up, blame shifting when we legit mess up, it might kind of feel good in the moment, but it really doesn't do us any good in the long run. So the starting point really has to be us owning, you know, I really did screw up here. One of the things I love about the Bible is how real it is and how there's many, many examples of people who have really screwed up, just like us, right? Probably the quintessential example for a lot of us is the example of King David. So again, this is the same guy that, yes, killed the giant with the slingshot, the same guy that led, you know, over and over again, the armies of Israel into triumphant battle, right? He was an amazing figure in that regard. But this guy really, really, really screwed up. A lot of us know his story that, you know, he saw a woman. He saw how beautiful she was. He decided he was going to sleep with her. And sure enough, he did that, even though she was married at the time, and not just married to anybody, but married to a guy that was within his inner circle of his military advisors, somebody he knew and knew well. So he sleeps with her. She gets pregnant. He tries to pan the pregnancy off as being, you know, the result of her being with her husband. That doesn't work. So he has the husband killed. So legitimately breaking factual moral law, right? And so what I find is so interesting is that when David gets to the point of dealing with this true guilt, you know, where he starts is he owns it, but he owns it before God. And he says in Psalm 51, against you and you only I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight. When I read that, I'm like, wait, what? you clearly messed up this woman. You clearly messed up her husband. You know, there's all these sociological wrongs connected with what he had done. But his starting point was to be like, to be standing before God and be like, I violated your law here. I'm in the wrong. And then moving on from there. And I think for us, this is always a starting point when we're dealing with true guilt, is that we just stand before God in our hearts and just are like, be real with him. I know I've crossed a line here, and I want to be forgiven by you. And when you read through this psalm, that's sure enough how it kind of progresses for David. So I think we got to own it. We got to own it before God. I think that there are times when it's really fitting for us to apologize to our kids. Maybe not every time, but I think lots of times it is appropriate, and probably some of you guys have experienced this, if you have older kids, just how awesome it is that our kids are so ready to forgive us. I think it's really critical, too, because I can't think of anything, really, that communicates the grace of God to our kids more than us being real like this and then asking them to forgive us. Yeah, we go to church. Yeah, we read our Bibles. Whatever, you know. But, dude, when you're, like, real with your kid and you own it, you're like, I know that I'm ultimately forgiven by God, and I hope you'll forgive me too. So I think apologizing can be really important. I think it's fitting that we get help, especially if we know that we have this issue, and maybe we're kind of stuck there. It's our temper or, you know, fill in the blank. I think at a minimum, we should be talking to our spouse, being real with them about it, maybe asking for help, maybe talking to a trusted friend. And, you know, I think there are times when we actually are so stuck, we actually need professional help, and we shouldn't shy away from that. We want to be able to get this thing dealt with, but then we need to get to the point where we're able to move on. And this is, again, I think the beauty of God's grace is that God, you know, because of what Christ did on the cross, he covers our sin completely, right? That was the point of him coming, was to pay for our sin and then take it out of the way. And really, you know, Paul says that we are then new creatures. He gives us a do-over, and we need to own that and move on. I love what Paul says. You know, and again, the Apostle Paul was, before he had a personal encounter with the living Christ, he was someone that persecuted and killed Christians. I mean, this guy had true guilt because he truly did wrong things, right? But once he met Christ and received his forgiveness, he talks about the fact that he's able to forget what lies behind and reach forward to what lies ahead. And so my point here is that, you know, when we legitimately do things that are wrong, we need to own it. We need to get before God. We need to deal with our kids when it's appropriate, apologize. But we need to get to the point where we move on, that regret absolutely is never productive, and it's certainly not what God wants for us, and it is not helpful for our kids. So I think of this as true guilt. That's really not what the focus of this talk is this morning, because I don't think that's what we're really struggling with as much on a regular basis. So when you, again, look up the definition of guilt, there's yet another definition in Merriam-Webster, where it says, feelings of deserving blame, especially for imagined offenses or from a sense of inadequacy, right? So now it's not fact, it's feelings, it's not tied to reality, it's imagined. And again, it's not concrete, it's just sort of the sense that we've done something wrong. Well, that kind of guilt is where we just feel bad, and it's not necessarily tied to anything in reality, right, that where we crossed a line. So we're just feeling bad. I think that's at the heart of what mom guilt is. So you guys probably can think of things that, you know, when you think of your own guilt that you carry around all the time, you know, what kind of makes up that guilt. I did a little brainstorming. I came up with a very short and inadequate list. So we feel bad because of breastfeeding, right? We either didn't breastfeed or we didn't breastfeed long enough. I don't know if anybody feels guilt for breastfeeding too long, but it's probably out there. Sugar, You know, we feel bad because we don't allow our kids to eat sugar, or we feel bad because we're the mom that lets our kid eat sugar, same with screen time, right? We're the mom that doesn't let our kid have screen time. We're the mom, you know, that does the opposite. We feel bad about that. We feel bad because we're not up on the latest thing in parenting. We don't know what the latest thing is out there about getting your infant to sleep. We don't know what the greatest new thing is out there about, you know, how to deal with your tween and technology, whatever. We feel bad about that. We feel bad about not doing cool crafts and projects like other kids' moms. We feel bad, right, because we failed to sign them up for dance or soccer, or we failed to sign them up for the right one. We feel bad because other kids are more behaved. They do better in school. They're more spiritual than our kids. We feel bad because other moms are in better shape than we are. We feel bad because we're not as much fun as other moms. We feel bad because we work outside the home and we're not spending enough time with our kid. We feel bad because we don't work outside the home and we're not spending enough time with our kid. We feel bad because we're spending too much time with our kid and everything else is being neglected, and on and on and on it goes. Not a complete list by any means. Here's the thing. It's pervasive. It's pervasive. So I was shocked to find out there's again studies on these things. So according to Ferris in her book, she cites this study in her book, Carry It All. She says 80% of moms experience some level of mom guilt. And this statistic was even more shocking to me. 21% feel guilty all the time. Now, this is from a TED Talk, and the person was British, so I don't know how. See, it says confessions of a guilty mom. So I didn't vet any of this research. I didn't feel like I needed to, because the point is, this kind of guilt is pervasive, pervasive in the West. And so if you're experiencing it, you're in good, good company. That's the point. I think the bigger question is, what is the source of these bad feelings? And so that's really what I spent time trying to kind of think through. And I came up with, again, I think a partial list. But I think one is, it's because we don't know what we're doing because we've never done this before. Right? It's really hard to feel good about something you have zero confidence in. And I think this is very much connected to the fact that we've lost a close connection to our expert teachers. Now, I'm not saying that we don't have all kinds of resources out there that we can tap into. There's an abundance of that. I am talking about our tribe, right? A lot of us are disconnected from our moms and our aunts and our grandmothers, right? And they were the people that we knew, we kind of trusted, we saw what they did, it kind of worked out okay. They got the job done and they were able to communicate to us when we were next to them that we would be able to get the job done. For a lot of us, that's gone. And I think, I think that really kind of informs where a lot of this guilt comes from. So I don't know, how many of you guys have heard of this book? You Are a, we'll say, Freaking Awesome Mom. Anybody? Okay, it's clearly not written from a Christian perspective. I don't know what the woman's spiritual beliefs are. But I feel like the book has a lot of great insight. And it's primarily, she's talking about being a mom in those very earliest times, the baby, the new baby years. But I felt like she had great insight, and she's really funny to read. But anyway, she was musing on this and talking to her own mom about sort of this disconnect between her experience and her mom's experience. And her mom said, people didn't take classes back then on how to take care of kids, my mom said. We all just did what we thought was best and what our sisters and mothers and aunts told us to do. And I just think there's some truth to that, that, and this is where our being in the West makes us very different than a lot of other cultures, where new moms are right there next to their own moms and their grandmothers and their aunts. It's not like that for us here. And I think that kind of leads to that sense of insecurity and that sense of, I don't know what I'm doing. And that can easily lead to then these bad feelings, these guilt feelings. I know for me, So when I was a new mom, my folks were up in Cleveland and I was down here. And I remember distinctly, my mom took a week off work and came down here to be with us. And she gave my firstborn his first bath from leaving the hospital. And I was equal parts gobsmacked by her unbelievable confidence in handling this newborn, just scrubbing the heck out of this baby's head. We joke about it with our kids, but anyway, brain power coming from those early episodes with their grandmother. I was just like in awe, but I was equal parts terrified because I knew she was going to leave in 3 days and then it was on me. And I don't think that that's a really uncommon kind of situation where, again, we don't know what we're doing. It's terrifying. It's easy to feel bad about that. So I think that can be a source of these bad feelings. I think clearly comparing ourselves to others that have it all together is maybe the biggest source for all of us, right? It may be the most recognizable source of this kind of guilt. We're kind of caught up in this comparison thing, and when we do the comparison thing, we don't come out on top. We always come out on the bottom. So Bruce, in her book, she was musing on this again. I think she was talking about someone that she followed on Instagram and looking at this woman's post early on when she had a new baby. And this is what she read. She kind of concluded looking at this post. She said, "It seemed preposterous that anyone with a newborn could not only leave her home and have enough time to get her nails polished ruby red, but also maintain it for more than a day. I looked again, searching for any glimpse of normalcy in this crop square of perfection. The new mom sat on a made bed, red flag, with her baby boy slumbering on her bent legs. She had the kind of thick brunette hair that pulled up into an impressive movie star quality bun, and her small child was dressed in a white cashmere sweater that certainly had never seen a diaper blowout. Was she wearing non-maternity denim? I gasped. Her baby was like 2 weeks old. What was going on here? What was going on here, right? And what is going on here when we make these comparisons between ourselves and these, I don't know, these really non-real, non-real other people that we're comparing ourselves to? Like I said, each and every time, we're going to come out on the bottom of that. I think connected to this, that, you know, we find ourselves not living up to the standard of our idealized self. And I think for us as moms, most of us, if we think about it, we have sort of this composite notion of who we should be. Where are those pieces and parts of that composite mom that we wish we were came from? I think it's kind of worth trying to figure out where that all kind of comes from. I know for me, part of that idealized mom was being the fun mom. And sad to say, I'm a lot of things, but I am not fun. So that was part of mine. My other big part was Mrs. McFadden. Mrs. McFadden was a mom of 12 kids. Don't feel sorry for her because she only had 10 pregnancies. So two sets of twins that I know of. Back then, she probably had miscarriages too. Anyway, she had these 12 kids, but she was a Girl Scout leader in my Girl Scout troop. And she drove us around for our Girl Scout outings. And I was just really amazed at her for her high capacity, really drawn to that, right? But she was so relaxed. She seemed to really enjoy her kid and other kids too. I was just like, dang, I want to be Mrs. McFadden. Was I Mrs. McFadden? Am I? I know. But I think, you know, one author I read just said it's really good to kind of figure out who are these people that we think are the ideal for us to be striving toward. Where did these ideas come from, right? And then I think with those in mind, sort of be able to begin to debunk us comparing ourselves to these people. I think the truth is when we play in this game of trying to live up to the standard of these idealized notions of who or what we should be, we always end up disappointing ourselves or someone else. And I thought it was fascinating. In her book, this is the woman that wrote the book, Carry It All. Her name is Ferris. She said this, and mind you, this woman at one point, and I think when she wrote this, she was an anchor for one of the major network, news outlets. She said, I would think, why does everyone else have it together but me? Is it my job? Am I not meant to be a mom? Am I not meant to work outside the home? Even with live-in childcare, I didn't feel as if I was getting the job done anymore. Live-in childcare, the ultimate fantasy, right, that all of us have. I don't know what would be better, you know, having a chef and someone to dress you like Oprah. That was always my personal fantasy. So clearly the issue is I feel bad, but it's probably really not tied to my circumstances. There's something going on inside me that's driving a lot of these, what I would call false guilt feelings. So, I don't know. Those are just some sources, I think, of where our feeling bad about how we're doing as a mom come from. I think the more important issue is, what do we do about it, right? How do we handle this mom guilt? And I have some thoughts. Maybe you guys will have some thoughts when we're done here. But I think the starting and maybe the most obvious place to start is that we need to evaluate our social media, right? I didn't say that we should get rid of our smartphones or stop our social media. I don't think that's realistic. But I think evaluating, like, what we're spending our time looking at, the effect it's having on us, I don't know. I just think that's really important. Again, this is Bruce. She commented about an experience that she had. She said, although most rational humans can recognize the Instamom phenomenon for what it is, an epidemic that promotes over-glamorized version of motherhood and captures a moment in time, not real life, in the hormonal blur of sleepless nights, I couldn't see the forest or the trees. Scrolling through these alternate realities often caused me to feel devalued, anxious, and unsuccessful. She said, for some reason, none of these women ever seemed to suffer from clogged milk ducts or chapped nipples. I couldn't understand why their babies never ever had gas or how these women were already back in their size 4 dresses when their kids were like 45 minutes old. How much time are you spending and what's the outcome of it? I think it's important to evaluate that because I think a lot of our unrest and the bad feelings we have as moms can be traced right back to this. Additionally, I think we need to decide whose opinion matters, right? You know, is it our coworker that seems to have it all together, or, you know, is it our mom? Is it whatever? We need to decide whose opinion matters. And then realize, okay, if this is who opinions matters, then I'm going to focus on that. And for those of us who are people of faith, it really comes down to, again, what does God have to say? I think God does have an opinion about how we're doing as moms. And I think focusing on that, again, you think about the Apostle Paul, you know, he was dealing with this group of Christ followers in this church that he helped establish, and they were super critical of him. And what did he say about their criticism? He said, as for me, it matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or by any human authority. I don't even trust my own judgment on this point. My conscience is clear, but doesn't prove I'm right. It's the Lord himself who will examine me and decide. It's God who put you together. It's God who put your child or your children together. It's God who's, you know, brought you and your spouse together in this time. And it's going to be God then whose opinion of, are you being faithful in the situation that you find yourself in? That's what matters. You know, when Jesus told that story about the guys that were entrusted with money from their boss, you know, to the guy who was given 10 talents of silver, and he reproduced that and invested it and made 10 more. His evaluation was, you did a good job. You were faithful. To the other guy who got 5 and was able to reproduce and invest that and get 5 more, his evaluation was the same. The issue for us is, like Oz Guinness says, is to really focus on the audience of one, that we are called to be faithful to what God's given us to do in our job as moms. I think we need to really think through what our priorities are, right? and how we want to shape our child. One author I read, she said, well, what you should do is you should think about how you want your kids to remember you as a mom. And I thought, okay. But then I was like, you know what? That's making it all about me. And even though it's tempting, I think it's misplaced. God gives us these children for a season. They're not really ours. And the issue is, how are we going to shape them, right? Not how will they remember me, but how am I doing with this trust that God's given me, right? And so to that end, I think it might be good to write a mission statement as a mom. I kind of hesitate bringing this up because I feel like it's kind of lofty and a little bit detached from reality. You can Google this. You can Google absolutely anything. And I found a statement that I thought was pretty good. It was, I will love and encourage my children to grow physically, intellectually, emotionally, and spiritually by modeling Christ-like behavior and being intentional in my parenting. I thought that was pretty good. I would add to that, I'm going to do this in community. And I'm going to do this while being realistic about my own weaknesses and failures. Even though this is kind of lofty and it's, again, it's like, okay, how does that filter down into the day-to-day with our kids? I think that's where it gets challenging. One author said, yeah, you should come up with a mission statement and read it every day. I'm like, oh, great. I can add that to the other things I feel bad about now, right? That's stupid. But I think, you know, thinking through this, and maybe if you have a spouse that's inclined to get on board with something like this, to periodically kind of review how you're doing with this, I think it could be a really worthwhile exercise, to think it through. So I think we need to decide how we're going to determine what is a success. And I think I'm probably preaching to the choir here. Success, turns out, is way different as a mom than it was pre-mom, right? Way different. I guess there's a saying out there that says if you want to get stuff done, hire a woman. If you want to get everything done, hire a mom. And that's because we're just called to spin so many plates, right? The key is like, okay, how do we determine, you know, one author said, like, what is a glass plate that we want to keep in the air? What are the plastic plates that we're willing to let fall? That's what we got to kind of figure out. And from that, then, determine what is a success. Bruce, in her book, she talks about how this changed for her, like it does for all of us. Once we become parents, she said that she had been to a cafe having lunch with somebody before she had a kid. And this woman pulls up with a double stroller. She's got twins. And she takes the twins and gets them situated in their high chairs. And then she promptly sets them up with iPads and turns on a show for them to watch. And Bruce was like, she judged the heck out of her. And she's like, I'm never going to have my kids do screens. Then she has a kid. And she thinks about that. She's like, not judging this woman, isn't it? Somebody should give this woman a parade that she got out of the house, got those kids dressed, you know, found a way to get them set up in those high chairs, and was creative enough to come up with setting them in front of a 30-minute show so she could relate to her friend. And I'm like, yeah, right? We've really got to change the way we define success, maybe alter our expectations. And hopefully with the help of our friends that can help us with this. And I think we need to get to the place where we celebrate those wins. You know, you've had a horrible day. You had to make a run to the pediatricians that wasn't planned. You know, I don't know, your car broke down. And the fact that, you know, your kids got bowls of cereal for dinner, you know, that's a win. They got fed, that's a win, right? After a day like that. We need to, I think, really alter our expectations and not just celebrate our wins, but I think celebrate wins with each other. I think that's really important too. I think we need to regularly remind ourselves of certain basic and essential truths. And that is that we are weak. We're weak, we're flawed, we have our own set of chronic sins, if I can use that word. That's just the truth about who we are, right? But I think rather than seeing these as a source of shame, really allowing God to help us view these as an opportunity for us to depend on Him and to see how He's going to come through, right? So again, the Apostle Paul said, and he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, I'll rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ might dwell in me." That was his perspective after, right? He had been afflicted by something that was really debilitating to him. And he asked God, not once, not twice, but three times to take this away. And God was like, "No, man, I'm going to allow you to be in this state. Because the state is going to help you not think that you're something else, but allow you to actually rely on me." So I think it's really important for us to embrace that and remind ourselves of it. I'm a very rigid person. I'm not proud of that, but it's the truth. And my kids were affected by that, without a doubt. But here's the thing. I saw through the years, God provide for my kids with people who were far from rigid, the exact opposite of that, in God's community. And that was significant, you know, that God provided that for them where I could never do that. And God's going to do that for you too. But the issue is, again, not to pretend or struggle with the fact that, man, I'm just not everything that I should be, but to be realistic about it. Sure, look for growth in those areas, but be realistic. I am who I am, and thank God that He's bigger than that, and God can provide for my kids and me, even though I am weak in this way. So we should remind ourselves of that. And I think we also need to remind ourselves, right, that God is sovereign and good, right? So we all know, or most of us know, Psalm 139, this was David again, but he's reflecting on how wonderfully he's been made, you know, how he's God's masterpiece. So that's true about us, even with our weaknesses. It's true about our kids too. It's true about that kid that's just like us that we struggle with. It's true about this kid that we have that's exactly opposite of us that we struggle with. That kid is wonderfully made, right? God oversaw us and saw our kids being formed, right? And who the people who they're meant to be. And Romans 8 says not only is he good, but it talks about how God is... it's not just sovereign, but he's also good that he's able to even take the things that are messed up and actually work redemptively with those. So we need to remind ourselves of that. And remind ourselves of that when it comes to parenting, I think. Because I think a lot of our unrest that leads then to these feelings of failure, feelings of guilt, are driven by a loss of perspective this way. So I think we need to remember that for ourselves and for other moms. Another way to think about this is to what I tell myself is I need to kind of unpack my bags and settle into what God is calling me to right now. I don't know if any of you guys heard this teaching. I know this was a long time ago, but in 2006, we had a guest speaker come to this church and she spoke on the art of leadership. And in this teaching, she talked about this experience she and her husband had of going to visit missionaries literally in Siberia. And these missionaries, when they got there, they were like, "We're going home." She's like, "What?" She's like, "Yeah, we can't do this." Well, then come to find out, I think she literally walked into their bedroom and saw that their trunk had never been emptied. They had been there 2 years. And they had never settled in and decided to own that this was what God had called them to, even though it was super difficult. And I'm not judging these people. I'm just saying for me, it provides sort of an image of, you know what? Where I'm at right now with my kids, with whatever my situation is, God is in this situation. God is powerful and God is good, and I need to kind of settle in here and see how He wants me to be faithful. You know, He's again had His hand in my marriage. He's had his hand in the kids I have, in our financial situation, whatever. He's over this. He's powerful. He's good. And I need to settle in rather than, I don't know, constantly allowing myself to be in this state of unrest and discontent. So I think that would go a really long way when it comes to our guilt. I think it'd be really helpful to cultivate and invest in relationships with other moms. That kind of goes without saying. Take advantage of the family that God's given you here. Some of us are lucky enough to have our, you know, extended family within reach. Be grateful for that. Others of us don't have as much. Take advantage, right, of our tribal experts that God's given us in our family here. Because there's a lot to be said about that. And I think in that effort of cultivating these relationships, it's really on us to be the one that models being really honest and real, especially when it comes to this issue of how we're doing with our kids. And it's on us, I think, to find ways to encourage other moms. A lot of you guys have new babies, obviously. Some of you are about to have babies. But I wonder if you ever think about, man, I wonder if I could find a mom who's a little further back in this process, and if I could find a way to say something encouraging to her. Man, that goes a long way. Goes such a long way. I think cultivating gratitude is really important. And just kind of remember that, you know, the position we're in as moms, you know, with all of our bumps and struggles and stuff, it's a super great privilege. And I think, again, to be grateful for that. So that's kind of the essence of what I kind of ran across as I was thinking through this topic. I found, Sherry told me about this book recently. It's When Parents Feel Like Failures. Has anybody heard of this? Nice and small book. You can read it in about an hour, which I love. And what I really liked about it was, first of all, it was only $13. I like that. And I also liked, I also liked that she's super realistic. She's writes from a Christian perspective, obviously, but she's not like, here's the magic wand and wave it over this situation and you'll never feel guilty again. It's not like that. She's very realistic about how, I don't know, how Jesus ministers to people with their difficult emotions and how, you know, we should go back to him and work through these things with him, you know, as we encounter them, and then as we encounter them again. So I really appreciated how realistic she was. So that's a resource. Lord, we're just super grateful for your grace. We're grateful for the privilege we get to play of being parents and being moms. I know for me, it's probably been the greatest privilege of my life. I'm probably not alone in that. So just super grateful for that. Just super grateful that, you know, you're not surprised when we're struggling. Super grateful that you love our kids more than we do. Super grateful for all the resources that you've put in place for our children, Lord. So, I don't know. I just pray that you'd help these guys, especially the ones that are just starting out, really learn how to really apply your grace to this really important area of their lives. I pray that they would regularly be dialoguing with their spouses, if their spouses is into this sort of thing, about their struggles in parenting and sharing that with other moms and other parents as well, Lord. But we're just really grateful for your Holy Spirit and for the other provisions you give us in the body of Christ. And yeah, just thank you for our time this morning. Amen.